Hello, and welcome to the fourth night of Millennial 2021. I'll just tell you what's coming up tonight. In 2 hours, I will have on Hildebrand Szilard from The Edgelord Investor, and then Jim Goad, and finally Dangerfield. But first, it is Ed Dutton, a.k.a. The Jolly Heretic. Now, before we get into that, I'll just mention the I'm not sure about my internet connection tonight. I think it seems to be okay so far, but you never know. So if I do go offline, Ed, you just hold the fort and I'll be back in a few minutes. The other thing is I should mention that you can donate in various ways. There is crypto, there is Bitcoin Lightning, there is the T-shirt that you can buy, the Millennial 2021, and there is the NFT. These are various things that you can do to support me because Millennial is a lot of work. So if you'd like to give something back, there are multiple ways you can do that. Now, The Jolly Heretic. I should mention first that YouTube, the last time Ed and I spoke, I was still on YouTube. I still had a YouTube channel, three YouTube channels. And the way that I got banned from YouTube is that they chose one of my videos on each of my three channels. They chose one video to give a strike to, and that was it, three strikes. So all in like within 1 minute, I think it all took place in, and that was it. I was banned from the platform. And the video that they chose on my main channel to give a strike to was Ed's previous appearance on Millennial in 2020, in which he spoke about witches and modern feminists. So that. And I liked that discussion and perhaps unwisely had left it up on YouTube. Perhaps I should have taken it down. I don't know. But I didn't think there was anything bad in it. But that was nonetheless the video that YouTube chose to strike me with. But I'm just mentioning that as a note of irony. I don't hold it against
Ed. You can't talk about feminism now on YouTube. That's now a banned topic. So yes. I've taken down all videos on that. It's an illegal topic now. Feminism, transsexuality is illegal. But then there are videos that are up where I also discuss the same book, and they're up. So I think it was just you. Looking for something, and that's what it was.
It was just a pretext for getting rid of me, and they got rid of Way of the World on the very same day. So obviously. That wasn't a coincidence. They clearly. So no, I'm not angry with you in any way. I don't want you to think that. But anyway, welcome back to Millennial. And what kind of year have you had, briefly?
Well, no, I didn't think you were angry with me, and I think you would have sounded even less angry if you'd had the voice that you had when we first started speaking, which was this kind of high pitched.
It's the chipmunk thing because my mic was on the wrong setting. So
yeah, I think we should have just left it. I shouldn't have told you about it. It would have been a hilarious chat that nobody could possibly object to it. It would have subtracted evilness and right wingness from your statements, and you would have been able to get away with anything you wanted. What have I done this year? Well, I've been working on a number of books, and one of them will come out next summer, and a number of papers on various things. I've learned to drive a motor car, like a big boy. So I now have a driving license. So that's the big news this year. So I can now drive a motor car. So well, I ordered from Germany some driving gloves, some sort of string and leather driving gloves with the hole in the back of the hand area. I think it's very important. It gives one's driving a certain degree of gravitas. so you can't. I don't think you can get in a crash and become sort of impulsive or flippant in your driving if you're wearing driving gloves. It's a formal thing, and you have to take it very seriously. So I've been enjoying motoring around for the last couple of months. And I've various usual thing really, various books, various papers, and of course I'm as you know I like the darts, and today is the start of the 2022 William Hill World Darts Championship at the Ali Pali. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes. Yourself?
Oh, it's been all right. This year has been quite an eye opener for me. Not quite as much as last year was. I think with BLM, the US election, and of course COVID. But perhaps you and I we might disagree about COVID. What is your position about the whole thing? The COVID, the lockdowns, the vaccines, and all.
Well, I think it's a fascinating rehearsal for the collapse of civilization, which I've been talking about in various books of mine. Is occurring. I mean, the idea is that a civilization is going into its winter once it can't do things it used to be able to do. That's when it's going into a decline in per capita innovation. Not good. But that's happening once you're in the autumn. But in the winter, you can't do things you used to be able to do, like Concorde going down or the not going back to the moon. So let's date the winter of civilization as being entered sometime in the summer of 2000. I forget what the date was. Where was it? July, when Concorde crashed. Let's date that as the start. So we're well into it. And so what you would expect is these utterly decadent individualistic values where you don't look at the good of the group. The good of the group is that if you have something like this, then you let it pass through the group. Herd immunity. And that's what they were first up for doing, herd immunity. That was the right thing to do. But no, the problem is that once you get this collapse in Darwinian selection pressures and you get the runaway individualism, you get a tipping point of individualistic types that would have been selected out under previous conditions, and you get runaway individualism, and then, oh no, we can't have that. No, we have to shut down society in order to ensure that people don't get ill, in order to ensure that, so you end up then with this fascinating thing of trying to shut it down society for the sake of a tiny number of people that are going to succumb to this. And then what do you do? Well, you have to come up with some sort of way of reassuring them. So you come up with this this jab, which doesn't really work. It works, but not very well. And so it works for about 12 weeks, and then you have to get another one and another one and another one. And then presumably that's what it'll just be like forever.
That seems to be the case. But surely, I mean, are you saying that they originally had the right idea, which is just to let herd immunity develop?
That's what they should have done. That's always happened before. Whenever we've had, I mean, you had flu outbreaks in winter of 68. The country didn't shut down, but that's because people had a lot of people had these monumentalist values, whereby they felt there was something greater than life, and so they didn't fear death as much. A lot of people had suffered in childhood in serious poverty back then, and so they were used to adversity and they could cope with bad things happening to them. The level of, I guess I call it, the sort of mutation in the population leading to people being paranoid and neurotic was lower, and the runaway individualism where people are utterly selfish and concerned about themselves was less, and people have been pushed along the adaptive evolutionary path of life, resulting in them being happier and more mentally stable and whatever. And all those things since, let's say, the 60s have been massively undermined, so you just have these individualistic, selfish, mentally unstable, frightened people. And so then, of course, they react with horror to herd immunity. They say it's eugenics.
Yeah, but they...
Which it is.
But I don't remember people reacting with horror to herd immunity. I remember the public being sort of relieved that it wasn't a serious threat. And then the establishment or the government's tone completely changed and they decided to go into lockdown and introduce the masks and so on. So are you saying that they made that decision for reasons of civilizational decline, or
my memory is that originally they said they would try and gain herd immunity. There was a backlash against this. Oh, what are you going to do? Let granny die. And what you get in a situation of civilizational declension is that you get a fall in the martial values that have built up the society. And so why is it that Rome at an early stage fought off the Carthaginians, fought off all the people that were trying to destroy it? No way were people that were outside of the city of Rome going to get Roman citizenship. No way. That's early Rome. And then late Rome, they just let everybody, including Germans, have Roman citizenship. Why do these things change? Because you go from being highly group-oriented, high in positive and negative ethnocentrism, high in religiousness, high in the sense that your group and your life has eternal meaning and all this, to reaching a tipping point of individualists, of basically mutated people that wouldn't have survived outside of luxury. And then that tips the society over once they reach about 20% into a more individualistic society. And then it's just as you get runaway group orientation, when it's group oriented, so you get people purity signaling and all that sort of thing, you get the opposite. You get individualism signaling. And we have runaway individualism. So you move from feminism to multiculturalism to homosexuality. And you see all these things towards the end of Rome. Exactly the same. Tolerance, homosexuality, women not veiling and women's rights, immigration and whatever. You see all these things exactly the same. Even religions that are death cults and argue that life has no meaning and you shouldn't have children for the good of, you know, the evil god or whatever. All exactly the Gnosticism, exactly the same. And that's what we have, this extreme individualism, which means that we are so concerned about, you know, a few people dying that the good of the group can't be put first.
Yeah, but I don't know. I just don't see it that way. I think that people have actually taken to the putting the group first. What would you say to the idea that the national governments, at least in the case of Britain, I remember Boris Johnson going for herd immunity and all that, they had the right idea initially, and then other powers came in, the Bill Gates Foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates, the World Economic Forum, other powers, globalist powers, came in and said, no, do this instead, and that will enable a massive power grab.
I don't know if... I think that the Conservative government had the right idea, but the Conservative government is in office but not really in power.
It's
leftists and it's business which is infested by left by woke types or whatever. That's actually the power in the land. So when they proposed the reasonably sensible policy of herd immunity, then there was this huge, and which Sweden did as well. Then in both cases there was this huge kickback. And eventually, there was this movement that there shouldn't be herd immunity. There should be social distancing, shut down the economy, and try and stop it that way. So there was this. There was an initial sensible reaction, which is interesting. There was an initial. It was almost like pushed into an instinctive mode, as we were when some weird, strange thing happens and we have to cope with it, are the initial instincts of conservative type people, of people that would have been, you know, the genetic norm under Darwinian conditions, are sensible and right. But then very quickly what kicked in was the maladaptive, individualistic, anti-group, selfish, short-term instincts of the left and of money and of whatever. And the result was this ridiculous process, which is going to elongate something that could have swept through the society in a year and been gone to something that will just go on and on and on. And then once it starts, then you have to get we're not clever enough. That's the point. That's the thing that's really salient about it. So what intelligence means is that you can solve difficult, novel problems. This is a difficult, novel problem. If our society had an average IQ that was 15 points, 20 points higher than it is now, like in 1880, then I'm fairly confident that somebody would be able to come up with a vaccine for this corona that would work one off and would not have side effects on anybody and would just work, and that would be the end of it. But the problem is we're not clever enough and we don't have the ruthlessness. You know, you're going to get people moaning about testing on animals, moaning about side effects, whatever. So the result is that we can't cope with it. We can't cope with it. We're just about coping with it through a societal declension, shutting down everything and whatever, and a sort of authoritarian state which compels people. In Finland at the moment, for example, you have to have a vaccine passport to do almost anything. You have to have a vaccine passport to go to the pub. You have to have a vaccine passport to go to a cafe. You have to have a vaccine passport to go swimming. If you don't have a vaccine passport, you can't go. You can go to shops, but you can't go to any sort of anything fun. You can't do it.
I was in
the Spring Baths the other day, and you have to show them your vaccine passport. There's this security guard, okay? So I showed him my vaccine passport like that, and he said, oh, okay, kiitos. And I went, Hell Hitler, like that. And I thought that was a perfectly reasonable thing to do. But the person that I was with criticized me for this, said I was a bit rude. I said, how's it rude? This is the kind of thing they would do in Nazi Germany. This is the kind of person that would carry that out in Nazi Germany. What is wrong with me saying Hell Hitler to him? And I did this, like this, Hell Hitler. He didn't even have the politeness to do it back. He just said, you know, Henker. He just asked for Henker, he said, just asked for ID. Unbelievable. It's an appalling.
I'm sorry, that joke didn't go down well.
It's a deport. Well, no, I don't know if he understood it. He was a security guard, Finnish security guard, so don't speak very good, like anything other than Finnish. But it was an absolutely ludicrous situation. It's a ludicrous and appalling situation that you have basically 20% of people here who cannot go to pubs, who cannot go to restaurants, who cannot spend their money, essentially, which is bad for the economy. It's preposterous. But that's the thing. That's the result. If you think about stupid people that are stupid, then they can't be trusted to intuitively do things because they'll do things wrong. So they have to follow rules. One of the things that there's a negative correlation between how conscientious you are, how rule following you are, and how clever you are. Because clever people realize once they get older that they can coast along on their brains. They don't need to follow the rules. They can break the rules. That's what geniuses do. They break the rules, come up with amazing original things. But people that are a bit thick, they have to follow the rules. And that's what ends up being imposed in this situation. And it'll just go on forever. It will just go on and on like this, I guess, until we run out of money. And when we seriously run out of money, when we can't afford, because all that we can do this is just based around excess, massive excess. We have a massive excess of resources. So as we produce less resources, we won't be able to do it. And then that'll be the end of any proposal of lockdown.
Well, it seems to me that it's not... I mean, there is obviously the midwit problem. And I think the midwits delight in the whole COVID stuff because they can get a snatch of some medical factoid and then repeat that and think that they're clever. And by doing so, they can look down on the thickos who can't repeat that kind of language at all. But, you know, I also think this is a problem of highly intelligent people as well, because they love to grapple with complex ideas and thus get mesmerized by them. I mean, I know intelligent people who make the COVID stuff make sense in their heads. They find ways to paper over the cracks and the contradictions. To me, it depends.
Yeah, the midwit. What people define this term midwit differently. The way I define it is you're kind of 115 IQ sort of person. You're sort of Adam Rutherford type. Such a person has the intelligence to notice what the dominant set of values is, the intelligence to understand what the dominant set of values is, and the ability via intelligence to force himself through effortful control to believe those dominant set of values and to come up with superficially plausible ways, i.e. fallacious arguments, but if they're presented with enough linguistic skill, they might sound convincing. You know, things like extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Doesn't that sound clever? Doesn't that sound clever? But think about what it's actually saying. What it's actually saying is, I will never be convinced by any argument that you're saying. If you use the word extraordinary, you're immediately saying that the claim for which you are demanding evidence is ridiculous. And that the evidence would be fantastical. So you're basically saying, I do not and will not accept your claim because it doesn't fit with the way I see the world. But you dress it up with this phrase, this appalling phrase, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Or correlation doesn't equal causation. That's another one they come out with. Correlation doesn't equal causation. No, it doesn't, but it usually does. Yes. And if it doesn't, then there's probably a bloody good reason for that, which, you know, you'll have to come up with. But they'll just say, oh, correlation doesn't equal causation.
Well, it's an equivalent of saying, you know, the stereotypes usually exist for a reason. And cliches usually exist for a reason. But the midwit will delight in saying, well, the plural of anecdote is not data, that kind of stuff. So it is a silly thing that these people do. But with COVID, it seems to me that another equally likely explanation for all of this and the public's leaping onto this bandwagon is their own need for religiosity or their need for something to believe in and something to serve. Something to give themselves to. And of course, COVID gives them loads of things like that, the rituals, the, and of course the apostates, the sinners, the believers, the high priests, and in terms of the doctors and scientists. What would you say?
Yes,
about that?
I agree. I would agree with you. I think we've talked about this last year a little bit, but it's a religious, Black Lives Matter was a religious revival. And QAnon equally can be seen as a religious revival that that manifests at times of extreme stress. It can be seen as a kind of post-traumatic stress disorder reaction to a period of stress and change. And so if you are relatively high in neuroticism, basically, in feeling negative feelings strongly, then those kinds of people are prone to revivalism. They are prone to being inculcated. They are prone to wanting an ordered, structured world. And they are prone to also other things that are correlated with it. Sort of narcissism is one way of dealing with it. So thinking that you're the best, that's a way of coping. Borderline personality, that you want a very, very strong sense of who you are and that you're better than other people, superior in some way, although there's a deep hole inside of you that's not filled, lacking love, and all of this sort of thing. And Machiavellianism, like wanting power. If you're deeply insecure, then if you get power over something or someone, then that can make you less insecure. And so you can see that the left-wing reaction to this, if you are high in neuroticism, you fear social ostracism, you deeply, deeply want power and status because you hate other people having power over you. So the extreme reaction to that can be an extreme and over conformity to this COVID narrative. And that's what I think is what you see with many, many people. So you signal what a good moral person you are by wearing masks and whatever. Now, there are some people that are of that bent, but it's so extreme. Like their neuroticism is so extreme and their hatred and fear of anyone that's in power is so extreme that despite being left wing, they will be overwhelmed by their jealousy of anyone that has power, their hatred of anyone that has power, their individualism. So they will be anti-vax of the left, and that's people like Piers Corbyn and those kinds of people that are of the left, but that are dissident. And then on the right, you've got the people that I don't know, I suppose high neuroticism, but if you add psychopathic personality to that, which is that you like danger and that you like being different and this makes you very untrusting, very low in trust of authorities and so forth. Then you can, and also if you add to that certain low intelligence, which will be associated with being low in trust, then that would seem to predict also being a dissident of the far right. And there's some papers that have been published this year that indicate that people on the far left, it's Machiavellianism and narcissism. People on the far right, psychopathic personality, neuroticism, highest on the left. But also on the extreme right, there's a certain degree of neuroticism. But that's overall. I mean, in general, basically, people that are more right-wing are less neurotic than people that are left-wing overall. So you end up with these two movements. I mean, on the one hand, you justify it to yourself by saying, oh, God, the scientists know best, trust the science, which is insane. Inherent in science, never trust the science, never, ever, ever on anything, trust the science. And that's why these genius type people like Hans Eysenck and whatever are prepared to poke around with weird stuff like whether astrology was true. Because they're open-minded. That's the essence of being a good scientist. And then the other extreme is obviously you say these vaccines are untested. Of course they're untested. For them to be properly tested, you'd need about 40 years for a proper longitudinal test. What do you want them to do if they're following a vaccine policy? Wait 40 years? Lock down for 40 years?
Well, I think it would all be different if the virus were actually a real threat. But the death rate,
and it's not.
The death rate is 0.4%. So
I'd be fascinated. They say, we're concerned that if we let it rip, if we just go for herd immunity. I don't know how we've got onto this because we haven't planned to talk about this. But anyway, if we go for herd immunity, then it'll overwhelm the NHS and nobody will be able to get operations and lots of people will die. And that's another thing as well with neuroticism is in understanding the reaction of some portions of it. People that are neurotic are also neurotic about their health. So they're going to get ill.
Yeah, but that exact thing has happened with the course that we've taken. People aren't getting cancer treatments and scanning, testing for cancer, and because the hospitals are busy with COVID, apparently. So, I've seen stories, people saying, yeah, my brother died, he was neglected by the NHS because they weren't doing routine scans, routine testing, and as a result, his cancer went terminal. And he's now dead. This is a phenomenon that seems to have become fairly common over the course of COVID. So, and that's because we did go the extreme.
Indeed,
route.
Indeed. I can't think of any case of someone that they have presented as having died of COVID who is healthy.
That's another thing.
they presented this person the other day, a few weeks ago. I was reading in the newspaper, some chap from Wales or something, and they said, "Oh, he died of COVID, and if only he'd had the jabs. He died of COVID. He had no underlying health problems. No underlying health problems. He died of it. He was a fucking obese. That's why he died of COVID. It's nothing to do with it. You can't. Maybe he'd have died if he had the jabs, as indeed people have done. They've had both jabs. There was someone today I read about in the paper. He'd had both sets of jabs and he died. So it's a weak protection. It's a ritual. It's like a religious ritual, like an amulet. You hold it in your hand. The COVID pass, the magical COVID pass, which means that you're going to be fine. No, you're not. And I think that it's a way of allaying what we're being confronted with as a declining society, which is a problem that we probably could have solved with the technology we have now if we were confronted with it 30 years ago. But no, now our average IQ is lower. We promote people not because they're intelligent, but because they're women or because they're ethnic minorities or whatever. We have an overeducated society and thus people that go up through the university system other than because they're highly intelligent. We can't discuss certain things, which creates a general atmosphere that you which is totally inimical to being able to solve problems correctly. But most importantly of all, we've lost. We're losing 1.5 points per decade, which has a huge impact at the right tail, which has a huge impact among the very clever people who are needed to solve these kinds of problems. And that's what we're confronted with. And what I think will eventually happen, and if I move it on to plugging my book, which I have, the past is a future country, the coming conservative demographic revolution. How these things unravel is that the intelligence of the society goes down and down and down and down. You stop passing on useful knowledge, which would allow you to survive a collapse. So you don't pass on things like now we have in Britain this shortage of truck drivers. You've got all these people with degrees in sociology from crap polytechnics or whatever. But, you know, we don't have enough people to drive trucks to keep the supply lines to get going. And eventually you become so stupid that you can't solve some unpredictable problem. Plus, you lose, confidence is lost, plus the supply lines can't be kept going, and the result of that is collapse into a simpler way of life. Now, when that collapse happened with Rome into a simpler way of life, they hadn't industrialized yet, so the population was far less dysgenic, and far more people knew useful knowledge. So when the Romans withdrew from Britain in about 410, there was a massive economic collapse because all of these people whose jobs had been based around the presence of Romans, you know, making their swords and making their armor and building their palaces and making their mosaics and all this stuff all went. And so you had all of the total collapse of the economy and people just retreated into the countryside, which it wasn't an overpopulated country then, remember, into the countryside and just returned to farming, cannibalized the cities for useful resources, and the cities just fell into disrepair. And people had passed on, most people, the people that couldn't find a way of surviving would die. And people had passed on useful knowledge like fishing and hunting and farming. Now, they're not even teaching kids joined up writing in Finnish schools. I wouldn't be at all surprised if soon they don't teach them to write. And so when the collapse happens, no one will have any useful knowledge, and all it would take would be, I mean, for example, a Carrington event. In 1859, there was this huge solar flare, which knocked out the electricity system that existed at the time. And that was just telegraphs and stuff. And it resulted in aurora borealis as far south as northern Africa. And the telegraph systems caught fire. The operators were burned. Things like this happened. And but it really only not much electricity going on in 1859. Now, if that happened now, if that happened now, if a solar flare that happened now, it would knock out the electricity system for months. And the result would be the complete collapse of society, a problem we couldn't solve. And that's why I think that this COVID is a foreshadowing. If the history of the West was a novel, a novelist was writing it, they would foreshadow the end with this. This is a hint of what it will be like when something serious happens.
Yeah, you seem to think that basically this is fundamentally a symptom of the decline in IQ, the decline in civilization, and the decline in religiosity. I don't see it that way. I think those things have enabled it, have helped it along. But I think the fundamental cause here, the fundamental driver, is globalist power. Is power at a higher level making this happen?
Well, does it have to be? But woes, my dear fellow, does it have to be either or?
No, not at all. I don't really know if we even have a disagreement here. I'm just saying I would say that is the fundamental thing. And these other aspects, I mean, as I say, the decline in religiosity, certainly, but it's that need in people is clearly still there. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been out on their balconies rattling their pots and pans for the NHS last year.
I think that's a good point. You could see it as a symbiotic relationship. So you get as this decline happens, we go from 50% child mortality to 1% child mortality. We're under a situation where we're enormously group selected, highly selected to be group oriented, and so everything that we're selected for, intelligence, group orientation, mental health, physical health, religiousness, it all is bundled together. And so with the collapse of these harsh Darwinian selection pressures from 50% down to 1%, you're going to get a huge build-up in mutant people, in these spiteful mutants. I knew this had come up in mutation in the population. Now, in that we were so group oriented, there'll be deviation either way from the optimum. But what you would expect overall is for these people that were the deviation, these people that would have that would have died of scarlet fever had we been around 200 years ago, but now they've survived and lived and are running things. They would be more individualistic. So then you get a society that has got this growing level of individualism, but it's still being suppressed by the structures that have been built up by the group-oriented society that suppresses individualism, that suppresses selfish people, that suppresses free riders and whatever, that suppresses them, that keeps them down to an optimum small number. You could argue that geniuses are individualists. They tend to be selfish people. An optimum small number of individualistic people is permitted, but it is this optimum. With the collapse of group selection and the build-up of this mutation, eventually they become such a large number of sort of selfish people that they can't be held back. And so a tipping point is reached, and the floodgates are breached by this tsunami of sort of spiteful mutation, which then tips the society over. And people start to migrate towards the winning team. And so this happened in the 60s. And so people start to become more individualistic. Once that happens, then you start signaling individualism. You get runaway individualism into the clown world that we have now, into the Kali Yuga. Now, once that happens, then you not only is individualism not being suppressed by the society, it's being promoted. And what could happen there is very, very nasty people, very, very individualistic, selfish people will be able to ascend to positions of influence in a way they couldn't possibly have done in the past, because they would be held back by these group selected structures. And then those people will think to themselves, right, well, how can I cement my power? I've got all this money and wealth. How can I ensure that people don't rebel against me and my interests? Well, I can do everything I can deliberately. So these things will be happening unconsciously anyway. It's because you're individualism signaling. So building ugly buildings unconsciously as a means of, oh, I'm so much more interesting than these people that built beautiful buildings. But then you could deliberately do it just to make people sad, make people feel crap, make people feel less, less likely to rebel, like deliberate, thought through policies. Which are a reflection of this growing individualism but also causing it more, because then you get it, you people feel unhappy. If they feel unhappy, they don't bother socializing and they become more individualistic, more selfish, more atomized. And so you could see that the two things, there could be a symbiotic relationship between what people like to call the, you know, the evil elites, and this kind of thing, occurring. I mean, we know that you get conspiracies to help out appalling individualists in positions of power. Jimmy Savile is an example of this. Loads of people knew what he was doing. He was spreading negative social epistasis. He was statutorily raping girls, very possibly having sex with corpses. And people turned a blind eye to it because it's just Jimmy being Jimmy, and he had connections with the royal family and with the high levels of politics and whatever. And now you have this Epstein thing where clearly you have all of these high level people who are all associated with this. I mean, just this sick, highly individualist psychopath, basically. So, who could be argued to be using the influence he has in the same way that, I mean, if you look historically, like, I don't know, this 15th century, people in positions of power thought to themselves, oh my God, if they start questioning Catholicism, we're screwed. So Catholicism was being questioned by a natural process anyway of people becoming more intelligent and more religious. You have a backlash against it, but then you also have people who are a rival elite, if you like, thinking, oh, this could be a way to undo this rival elite and for us to be the elite. We could virtue signal our way into the elite. Let's promote Protestantism and promote chaos and promote war in the German states and all this so we can get into the elite. And that's exactly, we can be elite and topple the other elite. And that's exactly what happened. And so this woke process could be a way of, you've got rival elites. We've had this overpromotion effect whereby there's too many elites, too many people wanting elite positions. And so one way you could get an elite position and keep an elite position would be by introducing measures to control and cower the population. So I don't see the two things as contradictory, really.
Yes. The only contradiction that I would say is that while there may well be rising individualism among the elites or among high capable individuals like Bill Gates and whatever, among the population, it seems to be the, from what I've seen, my way of interpreting it is that it's lowering individualism and they're actually becoming more collectivistic.
Yeah, I mean, that's what in this book that I've got coming out next year with my colleague, J.O.A. Rayner Hills Esquire, The Past is a Future Country, The Coming Conservative Demographic Revolution. We look at this and we plot the data and who's breeding and who's breeding by how much. And yeah, that's exactly right. What you're seeing is a coming apart. So basically, who breeds? It's, first of all, stupid people. Stupid people breed. Second of all, people with low impulse control, they're impulsive, so they breed. Thirdly, certain kinds of narcissist, the kind of people that will sort of game the system and think, oh, I'll have as many kids as possible because I get a free council house or whatever. They breed. Fourthly, specifically like the criminal underclass. That's the only group that has above replacement fertility. Families where both parents are on welfare and they're involved in crime. That's the only segment of society. So you've basically got then these what you would call R strategists, people that are stupid and impulsive and nasty. They breed. But then on the other hand, if you control for intelligence, then what predicts breeding? Well, is first of all, agreeableness. So people that are kind and nice, they breed because they want to have babies and love them and whatever. And they're very high in a desire to nurture. People that are extremely religious and also people that are extremely conservative, they breed. And the heritability of these traits is quite high. In the case of fundamentalism, it's about 0.7 genetic. In the case of intelligence, 0.8 genetic. And then this fits as well, people that are like low in mental instability, they breed. So you've basically got this coming apart, this carving out of the extremes, whereby on the one hand, it's the extremely stupid, impulsive, underclass people, they breed. And on the other hand, it's the extremely conservative, religious, sort of what we call K-oriented, nurturing people, they breed. And it's the people in the middle, the rest, that don't breed. So what you would predict that would happen eventually will be a, well, first of all, because intelligence is going down, there will be a collapse of society. There will be a declension. The second thing that what tends to happen when you get this collapse, you see it in Rome, is the breakup of society. So multiculturalism, people don't trust each other. So the societies break up into smaller polities, the breakup of the United States or whatever, breakup. Thirdly, what you tend to see is a sort of neo-Byzantium. So what we're thinking is that the intelligent, religious, conservative people will escape the chaos and hell surrounding them and create like little neo-Byzantiums, little hole out some civilization. And this happened last time. I mean, Byzantium was exactly like this. In 1075, 300 ships full of Anglo-Saxon notables left England to go to Byzantium, which they then did. It fled the chaos of Dark Ages England to Byzantium. And so that's what they, and they will attract intelligent people from all over the place, and they will be the kind of holdouts of civilization surrounded by basically third world, I mean, even if you control for race, even just among white people, third world chaos. So that's kind of what's happening. You can see it as a kind of zombie apocalypse in which we are the sort of band of brothers who are surrounded by just these mindless zombies that want to destroy us and destroy themselves. And we try to maintain civilization in the face of it. And that is what we would predict would occur. I mean, by the end of the century, the IQ of Western countries on current trends will be 85. We'll be back down to the level that we were at about 1100. And by then you would predict that it would have just split up. The United States, I'm sure, will break up. I mean, I've spoken to Americans that will think it will break up in the next 10 years. Maybe yes, it's already breaking up. It's already breaking up. The people hate each other, and they're coming apart into separate groups that are genetically similar to each other. They're creating new sub-nations. And I think that this is going to carry on. This is what happens in the Dark Ages. It's exactly what happened with Rome. It's exactly the same. I mean, if you think about it, in the year 410, England, apart from a few small areas in East Anglia that held out, England was a united country. It was one England plus one polity that had a Roman governor. If you move forward a couple of hundred years, it's divided up into numerous little kingdoms. And that's what happens at the breakup of civilization. Now, admittedly, they were all chaotic and crap, and the more intelligent people that were English tended to leave those and make their way either to Byzantium or to Moorish Spain, because that's where the intellectual stuff was happening. But so that's what we would think, that there would be perhaps Eastern Europe or parts of Eastern Europe will be where these has resisted this will be where these things will be, and we should see wokeness really as a crucible of evolution. The crucible of evolution used to be child mortality and warfare. It's now wokefare. Wokeness inculcates you with maladaptive ways of thinking, such that you think that life is pointless, such that you feel depressed, such that you have an evolutionary mismatch. And if you're intelligent, then you're more sensitive to the environment. That's been shown. Intelligent people are more sensitive because the more environmentally sensitive you are, then the more subtle signals you will pick up, and the better you will be able to solve problems. The more subtle you'll think if you're more sensitive to what you perceive. You're more sensitive to the environment. So intelligent people then are easily led into an evolutionary mismatch where they don't want to have children, and which is what happened in Rome, and therefore IQ goes down. And what we have here is this wokeness which inculcates people with maladaptive ways of thinking, with antinatalism and whatever. And if you are genetically resistant to that, because you're genetically religious or conservative or whatever, then you will have life, and everybody else will be selected out. So it's the new crucible of evolution, as I see it, wokeness. If you can resist, as a boy, being inculcated to think that you should have your genitals cut off, if you can utterly resist that, then you've got the right genes. So I think the future.
Could you list the various ways in which wokeness is a dysgenic? I've forgotten the phrase that you just used, just like 30 seconds
crucible
ago.
Crucible of evolution, I said.
No, before that, it creates decline. It creates a sort of culture of death.
Well, first of all, it promotes an evolutionary mismatch. So we have these five moral foundations of obedience to authority, of sanctity and purity versus disgust and, you know, chaos, and of loyalty to the group. Those are the group-oriented foundations. And then you have the individualizing foundations of harm avoidance and of equality. And we have both sets of them because we are a group. We are a pack animal. So we have to be loyal to our group, and we are under selection pressure against other groups, but also to attain status within the group, at least until quite recently, to get children, basically, you had to have relatively high status, and therefore you're very status concerned, individually concerned. And those two traits, equality and harm avoidance means that, you know, you don't get killed, you're all right if you promote that. And equality means that if you bring others down to your level, then you have proportionately more. And one thing that's found is that people that are neurotic, people that are sort of low self-esteem, mentally unstable, physically weak, they will use those values. They will promote equality and harm avoidance because it makes them, it's a way of playing for status because we all sympathize with them, but seeming nice. So that's why when women play for status, they'll go on about equality or harm avoidance. But when men who are physically tougher play for status, they'll go more on about, you know, they'll be more bombastic. So those are the five moral foundations. We're meant to have a balance between the five of them. That's what's natural. And that's what's found with conservatives. They're equally concerned about all five of these foundations. Whereas people that are left-wing, people that are liberal, are individualist. They're concerned only about the individualizing foundations, and they're not really concerned at all about the group-oriented foundations. So they create, but we the right will cede power to them because there's this asymmetrical sort of sympathy where the right can sympathize with the left's concern because the right are also concerned about harm avoidance and equality, but the left do not sympathize with the right's concerns. So that we will always see ground to the left. So there'll always be, unless you put in a stop to it, there'll always be a march leftwards until it creates such a strong evolutionary mismatch and so many people are unhappy and it creates just such chaos that then there is a right-wing backlash. And often the form that that backlash will take is people that are sort of, I don't know what you might say, far right, and they will be high in the group-oriented foundations, low in the individualizing foundations. So that's another mismatch, and then you get another backlash. And that seems to be the sort of swing of history. And so what wokeness does is it creates a mismatch because we are in an evolutionary mismatch where it's too low in group-oriented values. And it creates runaway individualism. That's the first thing. Secondly, what does that do? That creates runaway individualism. So we're surrounded by, we feel a strong sense of disgust all the time. Look at the buildings that are, look at, I don't know, ugly fat people in advertisements for soap, girls with Down syndrome on advertisements for glasses. It's inducing disgust in us. And these feelings make us feel depressed and unhappy. And this is associated with feeling that life is just pointless, basically, and not wanting to have children. It's associated, it's been found that antinatalism is associated basically with this kind of mismatch with basically it's mediated by depression and neuroticism and it makes you not want to have children. So it creates a depressed, unhappy people who know something's wrong and they basically get, the more sensitive ones just give up on breeding. And so in that sense, it is wokeness is a death cult. Wokeness, it literally promotes antinatalism, like as a dogma. Like you have this runaway individual to a point where you say, oh, we're on climate strike. We're deliberately not having children for the sake of the climate. B, it's much worse with women, of course, because women are more socially conformist. Women are more indoctrinatable. Women are adapted to a patriarchy. Take the patriarchy away. They're not used to making decisions for themselves. So they make maladaptive decisions. And so it's particularly bad for them, climate strike and all that. And then more broadly, it just creates this mismatch. And then it pushes people along a path of life, which is maladaptive. So for sexuality to go right, everything has to go right. We're highly environmentally sensitive. Everything has to go right. Push children along a wrong path of life and the sexuality will go awry. And this is also happening. And so in all of these ways, both directly and indirectly, it promotes, it's a womb sterilizing cult. But the result of that is that who's resistant to it? And who's resistant to it is going to be the people that are genetically highly prone, even in the face of all that, to want to have children, to want to look out for the good of their group. So they will be like, almost like they won't be environmentally sensitive. They'll be environmentally insensitive, which is why it will promote stupid people, because stupid people tend to be environmentally insensitive. So they don't tend to get inculcated with the woke ideology, but it will also promote people that are just like genetically religious, as I've called them, the Darwin, the pre-industrial norm. And so, and so you end up going back to that. Now, the problem there is that what you'll end up with then, as all the woke people die out, is the people that will be left will be these conservative religious people that want to have loads of kids. And they'll have loads of kids. And then there'll be stupid people, and they'll have loads of kids. And so you'll get a population spike far too large to be sustained. And then
and a very bifurcated society.
Yeah, a broken up, bifurcated society with a mass where everyone hates each other, with a massive population far too high to get enough food because people are too stupid to get enough food. And then you get big time collapse of like 90% of the population collapsing.
Bloody hell. So what would you say in terms of giving people hope for the future? Because everything you've just said is really depressing.
The future is there'll be, well, two things. The sort of more positive idea is that there'll be these Byzantiums in places, I guess, Eastern Europe, that will hold out. Darwinian conditions will reimpose themselves in the non-Byzantiums, you know, the equivalent of the West. And so there'll be a renaissance once again, a long time, 1,000 years or so hence. There'll be a new rising up of civilization from these Byzantiums that will sustain themselves through the system. So that's the most positive possibility. So there'll be a big collapse in population. Yeah, I think that's probably going to happen. Lots and lots of death. But the more intelligent people and the more religious people and the more conservative people, those people are going to survive this collapse in these Byzantiums, and then there will be a new civilizational cycle. The worst case scenario would be that we've never risen this high before, and so when the collapse happens, we will be so genetically sick in a way that's never been the case before. We are so decadent in a way that's never been the case before. We are not passing on useful knowledge in a way that's never been the case before. The collapse, were there to be some unpredicted thing, you know, like this COVID but worse, or a meteor strike or whatever, then the collapse would be unbelievable, because nobody would be able to do anything. Nobody would know what to, nobody could farm, nobody has the skills. So you've got these very, very sick people that once, who are totally reliant on civilization to survive. Once civilization goes, almost all of them die. Plus, those that survive don't have the useful skills to be able to rebuild civilization, because they don't know how to farm or hunt, or they can't do anything like that.
This is a science fiction cliche of a population that's become so reliant on its technology that when the technology goes for some disastrous reason, they are not able to cope with the nature, red in tooth and claw.
Right. So that's what would happen. That was what would potentially happen. So then you'd have complete collapse of anything that was part of this system. And all that would be left would be humans that weren't part of the system, like, you know, Amazonian hunter-gatherers. That's all that would be. That's all that would survive this. And then you'd have a very long dark age. And interestingly, how would they think of us? They'd think of us as like gods. They'd probably remember us in their myths as these sort of gods. They'd have vague memories of that they'd heard of that had massive buildings and were giants. And that's the kind of how it would be preserved, which is interesting. Then if you think about the fact that right at the beginning of the Bible, it says that when Adam and Eve came down to earth, there were giants living there. It could be that something similar happened before. Who knows? But it could be something that would be the worst case scenario. But I don't know about that. But I do think that what is more likely, it's certainly likely, is there would be a massive collapse. If it was a sudden thing that hit us, like a meteor strike or a solar flare, then that could happen very, or a worse COVID, then that it could unravel very quickly. Like with the Dark Age collapse, the Bronze Age collapse, that was seemingly due to a volcano. or it will be a slower thing. So in the case of Rome, for example, Rome was had been collapsing for quite a long time. It had been in decline since the 200s, I suppose. And then in the 500s, you have the Great Justinian Plague, and 40% of Europe is, sorry, 60% of Europe is killed. And then that's it. Then it really does just collapse into there's no writing. It's, everything's based on archaeology for quite a while. So that would be the best case scenario. So I think we should see COVID as a warm up, as a warm up. I once went to see the Rolling Stones in Wembley Stadium with my parents, and the warm up was Sheryl Crow. And this is the Sheryl Crow to the future Rolling Stones of societal declension.
Right, that's quite a unique way of encapsulating COVID-19 for sure. Okay, well, I'll move on to some questions from the audience. Let me see where they
begin. How are you seeing the comments? Because I can't see the comments.
Oh, they're in. Hold on. Well, it's at the URL that I sent you. If you go to it now, they should be there.
Oh, I'll have a look. I can't. Hang on a minute. So, here we go. Hang on, I'll just switch the microphone off.
Okay, well, while you're doing that and looking at that, I'll answer a question that's come in for me from Thomas Baden-Rees. Sorry, I always forget that. Thomas Baden-Rees asks, Woz, which shows or types of show will you be commissioning when you become Director General of the BBC? I think this is when the Rothschilds give me that that role, because Thomas seems to think that I'm in, that the Rothschilds approve of me and that they like me, so he sees good things in my future. So, well, what type of show would I be commissioning? The kind of thing that you would expect me to commission, the kind of thing that's of interest to me, although not science fiction, I wouldn't impose that on everyone. It would be low-budget drama. It would be simple, intimate human drama. It would be about the human condition. It would be about British history, English history. I do a lot of things about different periods in the history of these isles. I'd want to build people's awareness of that. I'd want to develop people's awareness of their heritage so that it's there at an instinctual level. And things about being human, things about, And I try to commission things from a broad swathe of the political spectrum, so that it wasn't too, propagandistic, so that it was sort of honest, authentic, just not politically doctrinaire. Because I think that once it becomes like that, it becomes dishonest. It's no longer, it's too politically biased, which is exactly what we're seeing now on obviously the left extreme. So that's the kind of thing that I would be doing.
Everything is politicized now. Everything. They had this thing the other day about with what's her name, Olivia Colman, and it's based on a true story about this couple from Derbyshire or something that murdered the woman murdered her parents with the man, and they fled to France. And in real life, it was a completely white area of Derbyshire, and you see videos of it, and at the end, and all the policemen are white. Everyone involved is white, but almost everyone in the cast is non-white. The neighbours are a black person and with a Chinese wife. In real life, the neighbours were just two white people. The policeman standing outside the house is black. In real life, it was a white person. Oh, no. It just makes it unwatchable.
It's disgraceful. I mean, yeah. Obviously, we could talk about that a lot, but it's all been said. I was moaning about this. I remember doing videos about it in 2015, almost certainly 2014 as well. So yeah, it's been a huge thing, and it's so annoying and it's so insulting, and you can't believe how dishonest they're being. But you know, the public do continue to watch these programs. So
that's the thing. It's like this thing, Bridgerton. Bridgerton, it's called.
It's about
a black nobleman or something in the 18th century. I mean, it's just totally insane. It's rewriting history. It breaks every. It's lying. I was thinking, is truth a moral foundation? I'm not sure what it is. I think truth is a component of all five moral foundations. All five moral foundations: truth, honesty, is significant, whether it's obedience to authority, whether it's sanctity, whether it's equality, harm avoidance. You could say truth is important to each of these, and it goes against it. You know, a black actress playing Anne Boleyn, and they turned her into a lesbian, and it's just a means of insulting English people, saying, look what we can do for you. Again, you can see it as a sort of evolutionary test, whereby if you can cope with this kind of hell being thrown at you and not go mad, you will have life. We think, oh, it's so terrible, the awful things our ancestors went through watching their kids die. Yes, that was awful for them. We don't have to watch that, but we do have to watch our history and everything we care about being raped and still survive. And that, they didn't have to cope with that. They didn't have to cope with having people in charge of them insulting them all the time.
Yeah. And that's only one aspect of how of the politicization. Other types are more subtle. Just the implicit feminist premises that are there in the characterization of in the characterization of the characters, in the formation of the characters in any TV drama. There is feminism just there. You know that the characters are Guardian readers. You don't need to be told that. Doesn't need to be explicit. It's just obvious. It's just there. And of course, all the LGBT stuff. I mean, it's just
that's what I like about watching. That's what I like about watching Korean stuff, because I think that Korea is in that phase that we were in the 70s or the 80s, where the group-oriented religion is collapsing, but the individualism-oriented religion hasn't kind of come up yet. So in that optimum phase of freedom. And I think that's kind of where they are. I think that's why all this stuff that's interesting is coming out of Korea at the moment. I don't think it's a coincidence. And if you watch, like, let's say, a Korean drama, of course all the policemen are men. Why wouldn't they be? Because almost all policemen are men. And it's realistic. And that means if they're going to do, like, I was watching a thing last night called Lucid Dream. So you've got this very unlikely plot. And the only way that you can believe that plot, that you can really accept it, you can suspend disbelief, is for everything else to be realistic. And that's the thing, we can't do that. We can't make everything else realistic because you have to have black people that are judges and women that are senior police officers and all this nonsense.
Well, yeah, but then again, in the real world, you know, the leader, the chief of the Met Police in London is a woman. So it's actually quite
Cressida
realistic.
Dick.
Yeah.
Yeah, but exactly. She's a lesbian. She's not like a woman.
Well, okay, all right. Okay, let's be... okay. Another question. Okay. Garlic farmer. Society is collapsing because we are too stupid to run it. Surely a jab developed by midwits, even if not malicious, is dangerous simply because they have failed to consider the complexity of the problem. Yet Ed considers anti-vax to be illogical.
No, I never said that.
Okay. Well, that's a simple answer.
It's the thing. People want a kind of black and white cartoonish thing. Tell me about it.
This happens to me all
never
the time.
I have never said that all people that won't take the vax are stupid. I've never said that all people that believe in conspiracy theories I've simply said there's a correlation between believing in conspiracy theories and low IQ. There's a correlation between believing in conspiracy theories and schizophrenia. There's a correlation between believing in schizophrenia and certain kinds of depression. It doesn't mean it's true of every individual. That's midwit. That's not even midwit thinking. That's sort of below average IQ thinking. I never said that it was a stupid thing not to take the vax. I said that you've got to think about how seriously bad the consequences of taking the vax might be based on the evidence, and you've got to balance that with how important it really is to you to go on holiday or to drink in a pub or to go to a restaurant or any of these things, which I couldn't do in Finland. I went to a restaurant today, had to show the pass. Went swimming yesterday, had to show the pass. You can't. So you've got to think of how important is it to you. I don't say it's stupid. I just say that in this country, anyway, in Finland, if you do not get the vax, you're absolutely screwed. I mean, you are. It's like not. It's people say, oh, you shouldn't compare it to Nazi Germany. Yes, you should. Having the COVID pass is the kind of inverse of a yellow star. It's you can't function in this country if you don't have that.
Yeah, pass. And of course, the big irony is that normal people, sort of average people, have castigated Nazi Germany for exactly that kind of stuff forever, for, you know, all of our lives. And now the very same people are, you know, will approve of the COVID.
Well, those very same people, had they lived in Nazi Germany, would almost certainly have been smashing the windows of Jewish shops. I mean, obviously.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That is why it is reasonable for me, whenever I show my COVID pass, to say, Hail Hitler. It's a totally reasonable thing to do.
I understand. Okay, the people I know who are anti-vax are more educated on the risks and failures of the vaccine than pro-vaxxers. It doesn't take 120 IQ to look at data or point out failures in logic. Only 12% of people have confidence in Congress. Low trust in government is the norm. So, I mean, again, he's talking about, obviously he's talking about America. It's a different situation. I don't know if there's anything you'd want to say about
that. We're not talking about government. We're talking about, I suppose we're talking about trust in certain kinds of science. It's more certain kinds of trust in certain kinds of science.
So I
suppose one thing I would say is the brilliant thing about this vax, from the perspective of, if you refer back to Woese's idea of evil elites and whatever we were talking about earlier, the brilliant thing about it is that it's a means of dividing their opposition. One thing it's done for what you call the dissident right is created this division between those that have been prepared to admit to taking the vax and those that won't. It's created a division, and in some cases a quite unpleasant division, because some people need a sort of purity signal and say, I'm so anti-government, I'm so sceptical, I would never get the vax. I saw someone on Twitter the other day saying that people who have had the vax are no longer human. They've taken the first road to transhumanism. So a woman said that. And so it's quite good in that way for them, I suppose.
Well, I mean, that would make you a transhuman, Ed.
Apparently.
Okay. Well, you might be my first transhuman guest on Millennial. I'm not sure. Thanks for having Ed on. I'll convince him of the benefits of cosmotheism one day. Maybe once we get rid society of these Christians. Cheers. So, it's a fan of cosmotheism. Are you aware of this person?
Who is this person? No, I'm not aware of this person. But there is very much a divide in the among dissidents, I suppose, between those that are trad Catholic and trad Christian and whatever, and those that are pagan.
Oh yes,
and some of them sort of tolerate each other, and others don't. Yeah. And someone said to me the other day on my channel that you should engage in some ancestor worship rather than promoting Christianity. To which I said, well, my ancestors, all the way back to God knows when, were Christians that engaged in Christian rituals. So in a sense, by engaging in certain kinds of Christian ritual, I am paying homage to the ancestors. So it's not so black and white. I'm not familiar with cosmotheism now.
Okay, I wondered if you'd had interactions with that. I don't know whether to read the person's name out. I never know whether to do that or not. But it's
Is it a Spanishy sounding name?
Yes.
That is a regular drinker at the Jolly Heretic, and he's often trying to persuade me the demerits of Christianity. We have an ongoing discussion on this. Hello, sir.
Okay. And then there's a comment about conspiracy weirdos, people who say things about the World Economic Forum. I don't know. I don't really understand that. It seems to be someone who thinks that conspiracies don't happen in the real world.
No, they do.
Of course they do. What else do powerful people do?
Do you know what I saw a fascinating video the other day? That George V was euthanized by his doctor. And that's not some weird, that definitely happened. That 100% happened. And when it was discovered in 1986, because the doctor, somebody called Lord Dawson of something or other, the doctor's diaries were found, and he wrote in it what he did. He euthanized George V. He killed George V. And apparently George V's last words were, God damn you. Those were his last words, as he was injected with something to knock him out before they injected cocaine into him. And killed him, and we reported it in only the foreign papers reported it as a murder. The king was murdered. We reported it in 86 as just a debate over the rights and wrongs of euthanasia. But it seems not only did that doctor kill George V, that doctor killed Queen Maud of Norway, who was the sister, I think it was, of George V. That doctor killed, and or was it the daughter of George V? I forget which. And his sister. The daughter killed another sister of George V, and the doctor seemingly euthanized Prince Johnny, who was the one that died aged 13 of epilepsy, who was the brother of the one that was king of George VI, that was his brother. So this is the Harold Shipman of royal doctors. And goodness knows how many other people he killed. And there was obviously a conspiracy to cover this up. So there are surely, I mean, there was a conspiracy to cover up Savile, and so there are surely conspiracies, yeah.
Well, and also, as I said, what else are powerful people going to do but make plans for using their power to achieve the ends that they desire? And sometimes that will be best done in a clandestine manner because they know that there would be resistance to it if everyone knew. So it's just, I can't understand this attitude that some people have that conspiracies just don't happen. And it's crazy to theorize about a conspiracy.
But the only thing is that when the conspiracies happen, they often are either small scale. You can get away with a small scale conspiracy theory. You can't get away with a large scale one. It will probably leak, and there will be people will have the more people that are involved, the more benefit there is to leaking. So one of the things that's quite interesting about the conspiracy theories that I mentioned earlier, particularly Savile, is it wasn't really. I mean, was it a conspiracy? It was happening in plain sight. He was admitting to it. There were rumors. It wasn't even really a conspiracy. It was just good PR. And similarly with George V, there were rumours at the time about this, but it was maybe you could argue there was a conspiracy by the papers to cover it up, but it wasn't successful. Most of these large scale conspiracies are not successful.
Well, exactly. The conspiracy is more in working out how to suppress the truth and how to distort it. So, for example, CNN saying that ivermectin is a horse tranquilizer. It's just a horse paste. I can't remember the term they used, when it has actually been used for humans, to treat humans for decades. It's completely a normal thing, but they characterized it in that way so as to discredit those who were advocating
it. It's a conspiracy to lead people astray. But when you're talking about a mega conspiracy, like faking moon landing or something, then that becomes much more unlikely because there's so many people involved. There's so many possibilities for it to leak. But it's with the sort of, as you say, there's conspiracy to lie to people. That's, I guess, a little bit different.
Okay. Well, I suppose I brought that up because it seems to be the way that a conspiracy, an artificially engineered thing, would be got away with. It's by just lying about it. So you have to work out how to lie about it in such a way that it will lead to people astray. Anyway, doesn't matter. Okay. Someone says the jab works better if you put a potato. I don't know. That seems to be a jokey comment. I'll move on from that. Someone says, yeah, Ed is the best. There you go. A fan of yours. Ed, the Jolly Heretics official doctor here. Were your ancestors by any chance witch burners? I think the image of your ancestors as inquisitors hunting down the spiteful mutants of their day is really inspiring. Ever think about taking up their ancestral calling?
Well, first of all, my ancestors were English, not Scottish, so we don't burn witches in England. We hang them. It was the Scots that burnt them, having garrotted them.
Well, it's colder up in Scotland.
And then brought down their ideas to England with James VI. Stroke first. But I'm not aware that any ancestors of mine were involved in any witchery. I had an ancestor, Thomas Dutton, Sheriff of Cheshire, 1314 to 1381, and he once got really drunk and went on a bender and like murdered loads of people and raped loads of women. But then the King of England, who was his mate, let him off because they were mates. So I'm not aware of an ancestor that's been involved in witchcraft. No.
All right. And there was another one from Thomas Baden-Rees. Woes, I was at an Illuminati meeting at the weekend. He means the TBG Christmas social.
Yeah, I heard that he was at the TBG Christmas social. Various people I know were there.
Yeah. And many of them were talking about you, by the way.
One of them said to me, I met your friend Thomas Baden-Rees.
He's quite a guy. I was at an Illuminati meeting at the weekend. Apparently, the future king is a fan of yours. He wants to give you a medal and a banquet in your honour at Buckingham Palace. True story. Thank you, Thomas. That's very gratifying to know.
When he says the future king, does he mean that Prince George is a fan of yours?
I don't know. I think he might be having one of his wild nights, and he's imagining things. I don't know. But I'm not sure what he's going on about there. He also says, thanks very much for speaking with me the other day. It was very gallant and aristocratic of you, given that I have squabbled with you this year. Well, thank you, Thomas. It's perfectly fine. I mean, I try to keep things in proportion. And yes, we have squabbled, but I still have fondness for you. Don't worry. Although I wish you wouldn't attack people so much, because it puts me in an awkward position, as you know. Okay. Has Ed read the book Countdown? Does he have any opinions on the relationship between microplastics and fertility and the decline in sperm count? Is it a threat to the continued existence of European people?
I did a video last night, actually, I think it was, or Monday night, on the environmental pollutants that cause just declining sperm count, and you'll find that on BitChute and Odyssey. And as far as I can see, yeah, there is some compelling evidence that it is causing declining sperm count. But on the other hand, we are reducing other things which historically would have caused declining sperm count, such as smoking or mercury. And we still have a massively declining sperm count. So I don't think that it's just to do with environmental factors. I think that we're just breeding for people that have poor genes. If you have poor genes, then you're less able to produce good quality sperm. So I think, and you're less able to produce, you can't produce enough of it, and that you do produce will be lazy and deformed. And so I think it's partly to do with environment, but I think it's also partly just to do with genetics, as you just, people are becoming every generation more sick. There is a fitness factor. We are putting on, I think I answered the question last night, it's something like 100 new mutations to the genome every 50 years. So we're the average person. So we're becoming, the average person is more and more genetically sick, and thus less and less able to have children. And if they do have children, they'll be more genetically sick, and on it goes.
God, that's grim. Okay, someone said, funny that you made the yellow star remark. Just a few hours ago, Dutch politician Thierry Baudet of Forum for Democracy was forced by the order of the judge to remove his tweets comparing Jewish persecution and the COVID passport. He was sued by Jewish interest groups. He has 48 hours to remove these tweets, or he has to pay 25,000 euros per day or per instance he repeats the comparison. Remarkable. But of course, I guess these Jewish interest groups want to preserve the uniqueness of the Jewish persecution in the Third Reich, so they don't want other things being likened to it. I don't know.
Ridiculous. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Okay, now what was the other one? I think that was all of the questions. So, let me just see.
I mean, they're not being killed, people that won't take the COVID vaccine. They're just being made persona non grata. It's in some ways quite similar to what happened in Britain, or England anyway, in the 16th and 17th centuries with the anti-Catholic laws.
Yeah.
So you were told, it's quite an interesting symbolic thing. You must go through this fairly pointless symbolic thing of taking a jab, which only works for a few weeks and doesn't work very well, and this completely pointless symbolic thing of wearing a mask, or we will take money away from you and we will make you persona non grata. And what Queen Elizabeth I said is, I will not look into men's souls. You turn up, you go to church on Sunday, to the Anglican church, and you take communion. Mm-hmm. And as long as you do that, as long as you do that physical thing, take communion, thus showing your conformity to the group, then we'll leave you alone. And those that wouldn't do that, they had to pay fines. They couldn't do. There was a whole list of jobs that got longer and longer and longer that they couldn't do. And they were a lot of them were sort of driven into poverty by it. It happened in my own family history. My own family, the Duttons, were recusants. They were Catholics, and they wouldn't go to church, and so they lost lots and lots of money in the 16th, 17th century. And so it's like that. It's coming. Like, so you will lose your job in Lapland now. That they have a shortage of waiters in Lapland. So Lapland now, it's snowing. There's that time of year where all the British people come to see Father Christmas and go skiing and all this. And there's not enough staff because all these staff won't take the jab, and it's just so they're sacked, and there's no one to replace them. So it's creating very serious problems.
Yeah, yeah, and of course, you've got to ask, why do they want people to take the vaccine so badly? I mean, you can understand in the example you just gave, that they want religious conformity. They don't want the complications of competing religions in the same space for reasons that we don't need to go into in the age of multiculturalism. But why do they want everyone to take the vaccine?
Well, isn't it the same? They want religious conformity. They've created an ersatz religion in a situation of crisis where you are a good person if you take the jab and if you conform to this. You are good if you don't criticise the government and if you just do as you're told. And so they want conformity. It's the same. It's people that won't do so. They are symbolising through not doing so their refusal to conform in this perceived key thing. They are therefore dangerous, bad people. And so therefore they should be persecuted. I think is a big part of it, because we know it only works for about 12 weeks.
Yes.
And we were told, oh, get two jabs, and the third jab, oh, we've got these excess jabs, let's give them away. Let's give them to Africa. And now suddenly, oh no, everyone has to have a third jab.
And a fourth one, I think Israel.
And a fourth, and a fifth, yeah. And just for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know that the CEOs of Moderna and Pfizer have both said that they see this being a long-term thing, like every 6 months or every year, indefinitely. The governments of the world will have to buy enough doses of their product for their entire populations. It's just amazing. Okay. Ed, I've heard you say in some of your videos that autism is a result of mutant genes.
Mm.
And that also that autists are highly intelligent. Mm. So could you clarify what you mean by that?
Well, first of all, I haven't said that autists are highly intelligent. Most autistic people have very low intelligence. And there's a minority of autistic people who are who are high-functioning autistics. And they have average or above average intelligence. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that, yeah, it is associated. It is it's something that's gone wrong with the brain. The people aren't supposed to be autistic. So it's evidence of developmental instability. And that's why it correlates with, for example, left-handedness, which is another marker of developmental instability. And it correlates with asthma, and it correlates with various things like this, but it correlates with various markers of things having gone wrong. So yes, it is associated with mutational load. And thirdly, what I meant was that among those that have very, 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 very high intelligence, outlier high intelligence, they tend to be autistic. And the reason for that is seemingly that autism, all else being equal, will elevate the ability to solve problems, because what autism involves is being hypersensitive to the environment. So you take in more information. The more information you can take in, the better you can solve problems. It involves being obsessed with systematizing. The more obsessed with systematizing you are, the more of an incentive you have to solve problems. It involves thinking in a very rational, logical way. The better you can do that, the better you'll be able to solve problems. So there's a relationship at a very, very high level of intelligence between outlier high IQ and autism, although it could be the case that intelligence isn't inherently good. So you might expect that outlier high intelligence, anything that's an outlier, could be a function of mutational load. It's just that in this instance, it's mutational load that has a positive to it. And so a lot of these people that have outlier high intelligence, they also have asthma and all kinds of neurodevelopmental problems, asthma and Crohn's disease and all these kinds of things. They all cluster together. Are people that are overly sensitive to the environment. And one of the things that results in is being more intelligent, because part of being intelligent is being highly sensitive to the environment. In the same way, ginger hair is adaptive in certain ecologies, But it also comes with, it's an expression of mutational load as well. It comes with lots of bad stuff like rectal cancer proneness and whatever. So it's the same sort of thing. So it's something that can be a good thing can come together with other things that are bad.
Yes, that makes sense. Okay, putting aside issues of humanity, animal testing isn't even that useful. Often other animals don't model human responses very well. Particularly given the existence of cellular tissue engineering, we really should think about reforming all of this. But there's a lot of money and inertia resisting. Animal testing, what do you think of that?
I don't know much about it, to be honest.
Right,
okay. I get the impression that chimpanzees are pretty similar to us, so if something works on them, it's probably going to work on us. So, yes. I'm under the impression that pigs and rats have various similarities to us. I mean, pigs' hearts could function in humans' bodies.
Yeah, that's so gross. And I have heard that before. Okay, another one from Thomas Baden Rees. Woz, what do you think of the conspiracy theory that next year's millennial will be on the BBC? I think that's probably the wildest conspiracy theory going around at the moment, Thomas. I'd love it to be true because it'd be really cool. It'd be really fun, but I doubt it. I'm afraid it seems quite unlikely to me. Ed, surely factors like the stigmatization of nationalist sentiment and things like the COVID pass will significantly impact the birth rates of dissidents. Won't coming generations be more conformist to the regime as a result? So will the stigmatization of nationalist in-group preference and the stigmatization of COVID resistors, will that impact the birth rates of those people?
On the one hand, if people become depressed and unhappy and despondent, then the tendency is for them not to want to have children and to see life as pointless and whatever. On the other hand, people that are inclined to monumentalist values and religiosity, who are put in a situation of stress, will become more monumentalist and religious, and therefore they will be more inclined to have children. So, and there's also evidence that if you expose people to mortality salience, then they often, and thus certain kinds of stress, they become more inclined to have children. And if you exclude people, they become more religious, which itself makes you more likely to have children. So there are certain things about being an excluded minority that elevate fertility. So it could be the opposite is what you're saying. It could be that they feel strong. They feel more passionately that life has eternal meaning and they feel religious and whatever. And therefore, it elevates a desire to breed.
Right. So it could go either way. Different factors pushing in different directions. Okay, one final question. How has Finland fared amidst the multicultural hellscape of lockdown and refugee free-for-all?
I'm sorry, what?
How has Finland fared amidst the multicultural hellscape of lockdown and refugee free-for-all?
I don't know how it's quite vague. I mean, we had the rape epidemic here in Oulu a couple of years ago, where there was a number of teenage girls that were statutorily raped or raped whatever by refugees, and that was a big scandal here. In terms of how it's fared in the lockdown, then we had a brief lockdown, whatever it was, last 2020, early 2020. And now all the pubs were closed, and now the pubs, in order to stay open, have to demand a COVID pass. Otherwise, they have to shut at 5 o'clock, which will bankrupt them, obviously. So therefore, they will demand a COVID pass, and therefore they do. So what you have here, as I said earlier, is compulsory COVID pass pretty much everywhere you might want to go where you could get food.
All right. Oh, God. Okay. I mean, that's just so depressing. I don't know what to say to put a positive spin on that. It's just, it reminds me of, again, I'm sorry to bring this up, but it reminds me of the smoking ban in 2007, because the onus was put on the pubs. And if they did allow a smoker to have a sly cigarette, they'd be screwed. I think they got like £20,000 fine or something like that. So that made it completely economic, just out of the question for them to bend the rules or break the rules. Okay, one final thing from Alan Bastard MP. Hello, he's a regular viewer of mine. Well done, Woz. Great effort on your part once again, and appreciated. Well, thank you very much, and that's a very kind donation, Alan. So, okay, I guess we'll leave it at that, Ed, unless there's any final stuff you'd like to say about, because you didn't mention your other book that is coming out early next year.
Oh, my other book? Oh, yeah, I've got two books coming out, possibly even three, but certainly two books coming out next year. So one is the one on conservatism, and the other one is on premature birth. So it's called Sent Before Their Time, Genius, Charisma, and Being Born Prematurely. And it looks at how the degree to which people that are born prematurely are massively overrepresented among geniuses and world leaders and religious leaders. And it looks at why that would be the case. Basically, what prematurity does to the brain in terms of damaging it creates exactly the same personality type that is the personality type of genius. And of the charismatic. So yeah, I look at that.
Okay, that's coming out next year. And oh, there's another question. Ed, is Woodley doing well, and is there any chance of a reappearance in the future? Woodley?
He seems to be doing okay as far as I know, but he wants to be a private person now, so that I think I don't think there will be a reappearance, I'm afraid. No. Okay. Decided to be a private person. I must say, I didn't think of myself as a public person. I don't know how they define public person, but he doesn't want to do that anymore.
Okay. All right, then. Well, thank you, Ed Dutton, a.k.a. the Jolly Heretic. I think this has actually been a less controversial... Well, I mean, if we were still on YouTube, I don't think that they would be able to use this one. Has anything been said in this that could... Who knows? And maybe they would be able to find something. Okay, well, thank you very much for appearing on Millennial 2021.
Pleasure. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Millennial Woz has created many things, and this is your chance to own one of them. A unique piece of work handcrafted by the Vile Vlogger to commemorate Millennial 2021. 100 hours of highly skilled labor went into producing this animated vector graphic, which can be magnified to any size. In the iconic Millennial Woz font, it glistens and responds to your touch. And at the center of it all, a figure representative of 2021, the White Stag, symbolizing endurance, discovery, and rejuvenation. This one-of-a-kind creation is up for sale as an NFT. Follow the link below, and it can be yours forever. This is your only chance.